Hi everyone, and welcome to our Bates XPI Community of Practice. This is Scott Weigert, Director of Learning and Development with Bates, and here today with our Vice President of Client Experience, my colleague Andy Atkins.
Hello Scott, pleasure to join you for this webinar and also to join our Community of Practice for this discussion of innovation.
Great. Well, here's our faces in case you forgot what we looked like in the time since we've seen you. A couple people haven't met Andy, I think, here as well. But our topic today is going to be unleashing innovation and what the XPI data has taught us. And the reason I asked Andy to join us on this call was Andy and Michael Sychek, who many of you know as well, set out a little while ago to understand a little bit more about what we could learn by mining the XPI data. To learn about the topic of innovation. We're working on other topics as well, but Andy, tell us a little bit just about the impetus. You know, what led you down this path of deciding this is something worth exploring?
Well, the topic of innovation has certainly been something that has had a lot of currency in business literature and business practice generally for a number of years. And in fact, it's one of the core issues that arises when we talk with our clients about what kinds of business challenges they're facing. And so it naturally prompted us to wonder whether or not there were any particular, perspectives that the XPI could give us on understanding that. And I'll say candidly, when we first thought about this, our initial sense was, well, this is something that would be interesting for us to investigate someday, but we weren't quite sure that we had the data that we would need in order to do it. And it was a bit of a serendipity that came about to help us get a better sense of how we could, in fact, investigate innovation and a number of other areas based on data we already had and hadn't been mining as effectively as we might.
Yeah, well, eager to hear more about some of the methodology that went into this. But before we get to that, Andy, let's just kind of give a little preview of where we're going today. We're going to share the methodologies you started hinting at a bit for analyzing the innovation-related XPI data, and we're going to invite you. One thing we really value in these calls is we've got a lot of experts in the room and know a lot about this stuff, and I'm always blown away by how insightful these folks are, Andy, when it comes to looking at sometimes a relatively small amount of data and being able to glean a lot from it. And we're going to lead a discussion as well as how we all can help leaders and teams drive innovation to improve business outcomes. So just a little housekeeping matter before we plow ahead with that. If you want at any point, we have a relatively small group on the phone, so we can selectively unmute people at times. So if there's a question you want to ask at any point, you can have your raising your hand icon, and we can unmute you, and we'll certainly want to do that sooner or later. And by the same token, you also can just ask questions. There's a questions tab you have in there. So if you'd rather not speak up and voice your thoughts or questions, by all means, feel free to share your observations or questions just by typing them in, and we'll be sure to cover them one way or another. So any other ground rules, Andy, that you'd like to add here?
Just that I would really, really encourage you to pipe up with questions or comments that you may have. This would be great if it's a dialogue that we have. We've got some perspectives to share, but by no means do we have the market cornered on insights on innovation here.
Great. Okay, so as we started down this journey, we started to say, well, we've had this Bates XPI assessment for a while, and as you all know, we've done a lot individually and with teams of leaders, but we see there's sort of a certain critical mass, I think, of these assessments before we could really take them and get some kind of meaningful macro data out of them. And so when we dug into this, what we found was, well, why don't you walk through, Andy, how we kind of mined the report. We did hit this critical mass of over 700 reports when we set out to do this.
Yeah. And so there are 700 reports, but as you're all aware, there's kind of a multiplier effect that kicks in here in terms of the amount of data that we have, because those 700 reports represent the perspectives not just of the 700 individuals being assessed, but of all of their raters too. And so what this allowed us to do was to have a database of literally several thousand observations and perceptions of leaders that we could start to analyze and dig into. Now, as I alluded to earlier, we don't ask any questions explicitly about innovation on the XPI.
Right.
And although we were curious about this, our first pass at this was to say, well, maybe in some future iteration, we might add some additional questions around business issues, including innovation. And on that basis, we might be able to find some observations. But one of our colleagues, Sarah Woods, who heads up our global consulting practice, had an insight that actually unlocked this for us. And what she said to us was, you know, we've got all of this anecdotal or qualitative information, the comments section that's in there. And it seems to me that there are lots of situations in which we get comments that relate to innovation. After all, it's a key business issue. I wonder if there's a way that we might be able to mine the comments as a way of starting to understand the data. And that really served to give us the key that we needed to unlock this. Because what we could do is go back into literally several thousands of comments and input reports that we had gotten from all of the raters who had contributed to these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of XPIs, so it's literally several thousand of these raters, and do literally a word search, a character string search.
Tell us a little bit more about it. So what were we looking for in terms of identifying a leader who was deemed innovative or unleashing innovation or failing to do so?
Well,
what were some of the words or phrases you were looking for, good or bad?
That was exactly the approach that we took. We looked to see who was spontaneously, kind of on an unprompted basis, identified by their raters as being highly innovative, or conversely, people who were seen to be challenged as far as innovation was concerned. And so we looked at terms like innovation, obviously, but also creativity, out of the box, new ideas, those sorts of word strings, to identify leaders who fell on both ends of the spectrum. And this was important because it created two different cohorts, a cohort of leaders or of perceptions of leaders where there was a spontaneous or unprompted identification of that leader as being innovative. And on the other hand, a cohort of leaders who were seen as not being innovative. And we really wanted to be able to contrast that as opposed to just innovative leaders against everybody else. Because, of course, against everybody else, there's a potential that some people might have been innovative as well. But we really wanted to see what were the kind of pure cases on each end. That gave us two different groups of leaders. And then we were able to use the standard t-test that all of us learned when we were in college in our stats class. Sorry if that's bringing back really bad flashbacks for many of you. But what it does is it gives you a view of the distribution that you have in a population. And what we were testing to see was what portion of the items, of the 90 items on the XPI, was there actually a statistically significant difference between these two cohorts? And by statistically significant, we were looking at least a 95% chance that these were different. And I say at least because what really shocked us is that the difference turned out to be even more dramatic than that. In fact, almost two-thirds of the items that are in the XPI turned out to be relevant and show a statistically significant difference between highly innovative leaders and non-innovative leaders.
So tell me, you know, if you could kind of go back in time a little bit and think about this, what were your expectations? What did you, before we show what you did learn, what would you have guessed, just leveraging your own assumptions and previous experience, what did you assess of the model of what matters or what doesn't? And I can kind of jump to the model at this point and show that. So as we look at the model, what would you, do you remember what you and Michael really predicted would happen?
Well, honestly, what we initially thought we would see was leaders who were identified as people who were coming up with great ideas. That's what we thought we were going to capture. And so from that point of view, we expected that we would see things like vision being a key area, or practical wisdom being a key area, areas where a knowledge of the larger macro trends would give the person a perspective and understanding what might be possible out there, and then the ability to conceptualize some new opportunity kind of in that vision space.
It's sort of, isn't it sort of that archetypal idea we have of like the Land, who created the Polaroid camera, or Henry Ford, the guy toiling away an Edison, telling away in privacy of their own lab.
Right. Or even the Wright brothers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's that mythic lone inventor that we often think about. And it was that we honestly thought would be what would distinguish leaders, mm-hmm. because that's what most folks associate with innovation, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah, I would have guessed practical wisdom, confidence, having a decisiveness to kind of push things forward, mm-hmm. make things happen, rather mm-hmm. than analysis paralysis, authenticity. You know,
sure.
Somebody's got a lot of ideas, I'm not going to hold back sharing them, and vision, for sure.
Those were ones we really expected, because we were assuming that people would be really wed to that idea of the lone inventor, of the great idea generator, and that's what we thought we would see, and I'll just say we were wrong, and we were delighted that we were wrong, in fact, because what showed up instead was an appreciation that innovation is not a solo activity. It's not solitaire. Mm-hmm. It's a team sport. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that, of course, all of the literature around innovation tends to point to, but we didn't know whether we would see it showing up vividly within the data set.
Right.
But when we looked at these two cohorts, the highly innovative leaders, those leaders who were identified by their raters as being highly innovative, and contrasted them with those who have been identified as not innovative at all, or who were challenged to innovate, that's where we started to see a very different profile emerging.
Okay, so let's take a look at which facets, obviously with so many, there were obviously cutting across many of the facets.
They did.
But there were about six of them, the mm-hmm. facets, that were really a little bit more clear cut, that these were real differentiators
right.
of folks, again, not necessarily who are purely innovative themselves,
right.
but who are able to unleash innovative in others. So
absolutely.
We won't have much commentary on this, because I'd love to see people's reaction to this. And some folks may have heard of talk about this
right.
a little bit more. But what we saw when we dug into it was assertiveness.
Yep.
Was one of them. Then resonance,
yep.
being kind of attuned to the thoughts and feelings of others.
Yep.
Vision, which
yep.
is a little bit less of a surprise,
right.
as we said. Humility,
uh-huh.
which is a little bit of initially maybe a head scratcher for folks, and concern. And what I'd like to do now, if we could,
I think we've got one more in there too.
Oh, do we have one more?
Yeah.
Looks like we have inclusiveness. Sorry yeah. about that. So I'd love to have, if somebody's willing to raise their hand, I'd love somebody to just react to this. You know, just in terms of just an intuitive reaction as you look at this constellation, if you will. Is somebody willing to kind of either, or you can type in comments if you prefer, but I'd love to have somebody on the phone kind of give a take on this. You know, what do you make of these results? And then we'll kind of share what we think as well. Is somebody willing to kind of step up and contribute here or offer some perspectives? While we're kind of waiting for a hand to go up, I'd just love to see somebody raise a hand because I'd love to get some dialogue going. This was surprising, I assume, to you and Michael as we're waiting for that to happen.
It was a delightful surprise because, as we'll explore here, it really started to show us that there was a different view of what innovation was about mm-hmm. and a much more nuanced view, not the stereotype that we had assumed people would be following, but much more a sense of possibility there. So that's where we started to explore here.
Okay, it looks like Michael Pitek said we'd like to make a comment. So let me unmute Michael. Just give me a moment here, Michael, and I'll unmute you. So it's Michael. Michael's based in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us today, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be a part of this. My reaction when I looked at the whole thing about innovation, my thoughts are, you know, that crazy idea pops up, and this is I see a direct link between creativity and innovation. I think creativity starts first, and when you get that wild idea, I think you have to have a lot of belief in it, passion,
yep.
so that assertiveness really makes sense to me. I mean, you're seeing something that isn't. You're seeing something that Others don't even put in their radar, if you will. And then trying to get the inclusiveness and the involvement, and then once you do that, you open it up to let all almost come to the potter's wheel and all touch it.
Yep.
And morph it. So the humility makes sense to me a lot. And you know, so that's one of my reactions to the whole innovation creativity with these facets.
Let's linger on assertiveness for just a moment here.
I also want to back up a second to what you were talking about, the link between creativity and innovation, because that's a really interesting link, Michael, and worthy of a comment or two as well.
Mm. So assertiveness, Michael, tell me more about that one, because as you know, assertiveness in the model is not purely a speaking up, it's a speaking up without shutting other folks down, and it's an ability to make conflict into a positive force. That we can kind of hash things out and make conflict something that's not an off-limits topic. How do you see that playing in, Michael?
Well, any new idea is typically resisted, and there is pushback. And so, you know, with dealing with that, I would say, almost dealing that assertiveness, the ability to deal with that conflict in a constructive way, in a expansive way, in a building way, would be very, very important to innovation. You know, the idea pops in an individual. That's the creativity. Creativity doesn't go anywhere unless it is tested to get to the marketplace. It has to get legs. It's very vulnerable. And so, In that, you know, even an idea of how you can improve something can bring up conflict, because there also sprouts up a certain degree of protectiveness around the idea, even though it's passionate and you want others to see it. You're very, I think you're very vulnerable when you start to hear criticisms of that idea. And so I think assertiveness would be a very strong facet. And then when you look at inclusiveness and then you look at concern, and then I think another one that would even play into this, it's not circled, is composure. Because and how can you comport yourself? How can you present it? And you know, when you're birthing something like a new idea, it that birth metaphor is so strong that it also brings out closed-mindedness as well as openness.
Really, really wonderful perspectives on how this, on how that that relates. And I want to take your birth metaphor and take it one step further, because if innovation is about our business children that we're raising, some of them we are the direct parents of biologically, you know, they come literally from us, and some of them are adopted children. Because one of the things that comes up here is that innovation, it turns out, is not just about leaders coming up with the ideas themselves. That's one aspect of what makes a leader innovative. The other aspect is, can you recognize good ideas and help them see the light of day and help navigate those ideas? And it turns out that both of those seem to be at play here. It's the recognition that an innovative leader is somebody who helps innovation happen, whether or not they are themselves the person who came up with the idea. Because in most organizations, good ideas or lots of good ideas, that's not what's in short supply. What's in short supply is the ability to help those good ideas see the light of day. And that turns out to be really key here. And I think one of the things that may be at play in this constellation as well, that may be something for us to explore.
So thanks for sharing your ideas, Michael. I appreciate that. And earlier, I think I saw Chris Polino had his hand up, so hopefully I haven't missed my window of opportunity to get Chris involved. Chris, I'm going to unmute you here and see if you can weigh in as well.
Hi, yeah, it's Chris. And a couple of points may have already been covered, but when I looked at these circles, the things that came to my mind just intuitively were, you know, I think people that are innovative are looking towards the future and thinking about new things. So the mm-hmm. vision made sense, but I also think they're curious, you know, mm-hmm. and so maybe some of the humility and curiosity comes in there. And then I was thinking about the conflict piece that you started to mention in assertiveness and how innovation and new things can come out of conflict. And the inclusiveness just made sense, you know, kind of talking and creating things with others. So those are just the types of connections that intuitively came for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that ability to navigate the conflict, not just between your own idea and someone else's conception, but as we're saying here, part of what contributes to innovation is this ability to recognize good ideas elsewhere. It may also be a matter of the leader's ability to navigate the conflicts that may be occurring between other people in the organization as a way of helping that idea come to life.
Great. Okay, well, thank you, Chris, for that observation. Let's move ahead, Andy, now and take a look. You know, there's one concept. We use this quote a lot in our feedback. We often use it with leaders who have an overstrength in confidence. In fact, when you notice, confidence was not one of the differentiating facets, but this one often lands very well with people. You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So there's really this sense that the age of the heroic leader, to use a term from a Center for Creative Leadership article from the last year or two, mm-hmm. is maybe a bygone era now and given way to the day of the collective leader, mm-hmm. the orchestrator, the skillful person who can pull together perhaps even global teams, to think about that. So just a good proverb to keep in mind and one that we use a lot in our feedback calls. Let's delve a little deeper, Andy, into the data. And again, if any other questions or observations come up, feel free to click on a question or raise your hand, and we'll be happy to unmute you and get you involved again. But before we go into what does matter, let's take a look at which are a few of the sample XPI items that don't matter, and maybe you can pepper it with some other ones that don't. So some of these are a little less surprising than others. You know, I would kind of think, based on our discussion of conflict, Andy, that a calm, thoughtful style makes sensitive issues discussable. That would seem like a good thing to have if you're going to be innovative.
It would seem to be. And it's important here to be clear on what's on this list.
Yeah.
Because the items on this list, we're not saying that they aren't things that would be relevant to someone who's trying to be innovative. They may, in fact, be relevant. So having a calm, thoughtful style helps make sensitive issues discussable. That may be a relevant skill. What we found, though, was that it wasn't a skill that tended to be distinctive for innovative leaders as opposed to non-innovative leaders. So you could be a non-innovative leader and still be as likely to score well on having a calm, thoughtful style that makes sensitive issues discussable. And similarly, the last one that we had here about knowing the industry, the latest trends, and where things are going.
That one surprised me.
Right. So that goes to the, in some sense, that was one that we actually thought would distinguish leaders. Mm. But on reflection, we came to realize that it's more a matter that it's not that that's immaterial to an innovative leader. It's just not distinctive. A non-innovative leader can be just as knowledgeable about the industry, latest trends, and where things are going without being someone who helps encourage innovation. And one of the things I was alluding to earlier and just wanted to come back to is, what do we mean by innovation? Mm-hmm. Because we had a statement earlier from, I think it was Michael, that talked about creativity. Mm-hmm. And creativity is one part of innovation. But the definition, or one of the working definitions a lot of people have on innovation is creativity put to work. So it's not just creativity for its own sake. It's creativity applied to a business outcome, or as some people say, creativity that's productive. And so it's not just any new idea. It's a new idea that can gain traction, is scalable, is desirable. All of those sorts of things are part of what makes an innovative idea something that will really catch on.
So just because you know where the industry is going and latest trends, you may or may not be able to connect that into what we should do about that.
That's
what
right.
kind of idea we can do to kind of leverage that knowledge.
Exactly, and may or may not be applying that in the pursuit of shepherding new ideas to market or developing new ideas yourself.
Great. All right, so anything else that's not here that is also doesn't matter?
Well, I think that the key point here is, as we were saying, so those things that don't distinguish, it's not that we're saying they're irrelevant to an innovative leader. What we are saying is they're not unique to an innovative leader.
Okay, so let's look at some of the things that do matter. So one theme that came up was being open to others' ideas.
Right.
That was something that came up. And here's a few of the sample items that you see in front of you on the screen here. So the first two, in fact, are all of them from humility. Let me see. The first two are from humility. I think the third is from interactivity, if I'm not mistaken. So any thoughts on these, Andy?
Well, here just building on the conversation we were having earlier, these apply both if you're talking about an idea that you've generated yourself and whether you will be open and humble enough to want to hear other people's perspectives and be open to the improvement of your idea. And similarly, if we look at the point of view of innovation as being the ability to shepherd good ideas, whether they're yours or someone else's, knowing that you don't have all the answers and valuing that truth or that observation more than being the one who happened to come up with it, that's very much part of the makeup of someone who's going to find good ideas wherever they are in an organization and look to bring the most promising of those to life.
You know, we just got an interesting comment from Lynn Ernst on here who said, you know, it's related to our previous slide, that industry knowledge could even be limiting.
It can be. It can be, because very often what happens with an excess of industry knowledge is that you tend to get trapped by the established way of doing things. Mm-hmm. You know what best practices are. And Lynn, I'm sure that you, in your own practice, have often dealt with issues where you saw the power of diverse teams, even teams that included people who weren't quote-unquote experts, and of course all the research that shows that those types of groups can often come up with even better ideas because they're not constrained by the accepted way of doing things.
Yeah, maybe I'll unmute Lynn here for a moment to see if
Love
she has anything
more
she'd like to add. Lynn, anything you'd like to add to that? We have to unmute her there.
Yeah.
We'll see. We put her on the spot there, so I don't know if you're in a position where you can chime in, Lynn. I thought it was a good observation.
Yeah.
I think she might be on mute right now, so we'll maybe come back to Lynn in a little bit.
Okay.
So. So let's see what else matters. Another theme was letting people express differences.
Yes.
So we see from, if you know your model pretty well, and I'm sure, I know you're all ramping up on that. So the first one coming from concern, of course. The second one from restraint. The third, I believe, is from composure. And the bottom one is from resonance. So a nice smorgasbord of facets represented here, but all with a common theme that cuts across those facets and dimensions.
Yes. And this is really very much about creating an environment where people can bring conflicting ideas to bear. Because very often what's going to generate the most light in innovation is being able to get a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different points of view together. And the ability of a leader to create an environment where people can express their differences and work those differences out, that's going to be very much a part of creating the kind of environment where new ideas can flourish and can be vetted, and you can get constructive engagement around those ideas.
And then another theme we had was aligning people around the goals to drive change. So helping us find common cause to accomplish challenging goals, I think, is from concern. Mm-hmm. Enterprise-wide view of challenge and opportunities from vision. And likewise, the bottom one, portrayal of goals and plans, is both credible and inspiring. So, and as we know, vision is both strategic thinking and inspiration. That middle one is more the strategic thinking side. The bottom one is a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But a lot of what this is about is the leader's ability to show that the implementation of an idea actually is feasible. that it's possible to take this idea that may be a little soft in the middle, a little squishy around the edges, but as it's going to get further defined, that ability to help people pull together in a way that will allow that opportunity to be realized, to be able to create a set of goals and some plans that can take this idea and make it real, take it out of the theoretical and turn it into the practical.
Right. And then one last cluster we found here was around deliberately facilitating debate. So challenging other points of view for a purpose and expects a reasonable response, that's from assertiveness.
Yep.
The second one involving people with a stake, that's inclusiveness. And then, of course, the next one's inclusiveness, still has the word inclusion right in it. And then a refreshing curiosity and the interest in the ideas of other. I forget whether that's inclusiveness or interactivity, but I think it's one of those.
I don't recall.
Yeah. So in any event, so that chance to let people get viewpoints on the table, hash things out, not shutting things down. I was just this morning, actually, Andy, getting somebody ready for their first XPI feedback, one of our partners over in Europe. And the leader she's working with needs to engage people and get them aligned around some things that need to change in his organization. And one of his lowest rated items was expressing a refreshing curiosity and interest. He's got a very rigid sense of here's how we do things. I'm an experienced guy. This is how we do things. So it's squashing people in their organization. And in fact, a lot of their best people are moving on to other organizations. Headhunters are gobbling them up.
Well, of course, that last one also points to having that innate curiosity that would put you on the lookout for good ideas wherever they may be, that you'd be on the innovation hunt, if you will, and looking for an opportunity to bring good ideas to light.
Yeah. Well, again, I'd invite folks to weigh in and say, just let us know if you'd like to share a point of view on this. We will be opening it up a little bit more in a little bit as well, but we can always pause at any moment for that. Another quote here in terms of understanding innovation, this is one that Andy has quoted Ed Catmull from the co-founder of Pixar in our innovation article, which is in Rotman's now, isn't it?
It is. It was published in September in the fall issue of Rotman.
So I don't know if this exact quote was in there, but this is one I dug up for today that he said mistakes. There's this notion that we think of mistakes as like, well, it's sort of a necessary evil. He said they're not a necessary evil. They aren't evil at all. They're an inevitable consequence of doing something new.
Yeah. There's another great book that some people might have want to put on your holiday list of something to read. It's by a woman named Catherine Schultz, and the book's called Being Wrong. And she was a writer who became a wrongologist to really explore what it means to be wrong. And this is part of that view that being wrong sometimes is a way of being constructively engaging.
Right.
And it's where creativity comes from.
Absolutely. Well, I see we have another hand up.
This yes.
Sean Simon has his hand up. And Sean, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Super. You know, my question has to do with just getting back to the validation and T-scores. How many of the facets, I mean, you've identified the six facets, how many of those facets does one need to have proficiency in to be innovative? Is it, you give a six, is it all six, or is it two of the six, three of the six? I'm just not clear.
Yeah, great question. What we were doing by giving you the facets was giving you a bit of a shorthand, because it's really kind of the level of the 57 items themselves that we saw the differentiation. What we were using the facet diagram, the facet clustering to illustrate, Sean, was where there was a tendency for those items to fall, to give you a bit of a pattern for them. So that was the purpose of this. We didn't validate it at the facet level. We validated it at the item level. Now, in terms of how many do you need to have of those in order to be innovative, I think it's more to the point of understanding the underlying strategy that we're talking about here, which is what is it that's distinguishing an innovative leader? And that's that openness to the ideas of others and the ability to help ideas navigate their way through an organization by reconciling differences and dealing with conflict, being able to be planful in going forward, and being able to create an environment where there is an openness to new ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's really where what we're talking about. We're not being prescriptive here and saying, well, if you don't have a strength in each of these areas, you're doomed. Far from it.
Tandy, to build on Sean's question, so 57 of the items out of 90, there was a difference. But I think it just stands to reason that if an individual leader is strong on 30 or 40 of those versus 10 or 15, that more is going to be better in general.
Without
and,
question.
And that the qualities that matter within an individual context, this isn't an ideographic assessment.
That's right.
Perhaps humility is going to be more important in one context than inclusiveness or something like
that. Quite possibly, particularly as you think about the culture of an individual organization and how that plays out in terms of how they're perceived.
Is that helpful, Sean?
That's good. Thank you.
So
one's not going to be able to – can you still hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, so no one's going to pick up an assessment, look at the facet scores, and know immediately whether they have a tendency to be innovative or not. They're going to have to really dig in to understand, you know, where they generally lie within the facets that have been identified is really what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
That's kind of on us, I think, as feedback providers, too, to kind of tether that for people. You know, if one of your business imperatives is leading innovation, as I even walk through your strengths, I might say, well, gee, Sean, one of your great strengths is humility. And you might be surprised to know that humility is actually one of the facets that's very important to leading innovation. So that's very good news. Or conversely, I might say, on the other hand, when we get to your development themes, now, inclusiveness is something we also know is important to innovation, and that's an area where you could stand to work on it. So I think any time we could kind of work some of this data or this knowledge into that, that will be helpful.
And so, I think that the next section we're going to move to is going to give you a chance to see that in action.
Yeah, let's take a look at this. So we put together a couple case studies, and these are both individuals that Andy has not only done the feedback with but has coached as well, particularly.
Yeah.
So Andy, talk about Chris, first of all, here. We're seeing his constellation, but give us just a thumbnail sketch of his background.
Okay, so the names have been changed here to protect the innocent or the guilty.
Or less so,
as the case may be. So we're also going to obscure the companies involved. But Chris is a chief science officer for a pharmaceutical firm. We'll call it Obsidian Pharmaceuticals. And it's a small startup that's venture-funded. And it's a promising firm, but it's been rapidly burning through its seed capital. And now the focus is really on helping to drive product results quickly so they can move forward into the commercialization strategy. He's been always the smartest guy in the room. That's kind of Chris's central tendency. And frankly, it's really never even been a close race. He's a brilliant researcher, has multiple degrees, multiple PhDs, in fact, multiple patents. And he's actually the person who was the developer of the primary technology that's allowing Obsidian to go to market. But the company's really reaching something of an inflection point, and they need to get a treatment out. And Chris really needs to be able to collaborate with his internal development partners to help this happen. So he's historically held decision-making pretty close to the vest. I'll just say that.
So I don't know if anybody's interested in taking a crack at this one. I know some of those people like to take a crack at these constellations. Anybody interested in kind of taking a shot at how they think Chris would do when it comes to unleashing innovation based on this profile? Is there some good news here, and what would give you cause for concern? Anybody want to give it a shot? And while we're awaiting that, I suppose we have Bill Horst on the line. I don't know, maybe I can unmute Bill. Bill's one of our feedback providers. Bill, I don't know if you're interested in taking any shots here. If we told you this guy, I've got you unmuted now, Bill. If you were helping this guy to get better at unleashing innovation, what do you think is there some good news here, and what would be concerns for you? Are you with us, Bill?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for joining us, Bill. I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I'm sure you've seen profiles like this before.
I have. I think the biggest things around the innovativeness is humility and inclusiveness. So it kind of gives you the picture of somebody that may be working in a void and not pulling in ideas from others, may have a little bit about being right all the time. The assertiveness is a little bit of a surprise with that other combination, in that he may not even be pushing out to other people with his ideas. He just kind of sits by himself and kind of produces and doesn't necessarily fight for his ideas. So that's a little bit of a question mark for me. But the inclusiveness and humility clearly are areas that would be part of the coaching process.
You know, Bill, I sometimes get nervous when I see authenticity and practical wisdom together, sometimes with confidence also high or integrity high.
Yeah.
You know, you start to get a vision of somebody who's really smart and not hesitant to speak up and share their thoughts. But if integrity's high, they can be kind of rigid about what they think. And if confidence is high, really too much emphasis on speed and the others involved. But have you seen that kind of pattern?
I have. There tends to not be a lot of new information coming in to them. And I think Andy's comment about being a person being a researcher, they kind of research within their own realms, but really don't allow information on an interactive basis to come in. It's more from the cognitive or intellectual basis.
Yeah. And interesting you raised that question about assertiveness, Bill, because in this particular case, because of the high authenticity as well, Chris isn't shy about putting his ideas forward, but he tends to drop bombs into meetings and then, you know, create discord and not be particularly skillful at being able to reconcile the challenges that come up in the differing points of view. So that's part of where the relative weakness and assertiveness comes up.
Great. All right, Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot again in a moment. So listen carefully as Andy walks through a different leader, Lisa, who's same industry.
Yep.
But tell us more about Lisa, who's got obviously a pretty different profile.
Yep.
And, Bill, we're going to ask you what you think is working in her favor or anything that would give you pause here.
So in this case, actually, Lisa is the head of product development for Geniosity, which is was recently acquired by a major Silicon Valley company. So it's high-tech, not pharmaceutical in this case.
Oh, sorry.
And it serves as a division focusing on a specific new product area. Again, we're changing names to protect the innocent here. They have one highly successful product in the market, and other products are in the pipeline. They hold a lot of promise, but there's pressure to get one of them through development into the market. Earlier in her career, Lisa was a gifted programmer, and she now oversees numerous areas that are cross-functional teams responsible for product development. The big challenge is to make sure that those teams are operating efficiently and effectively to keep the product moving through the pipeline. And it's not particularly easy to do that, as everyone is pretty much an expert, and several people have a reputation of seeing their discipline as the most important, of course. So she's got a bit of a mixed bag of folks that she's got to help get aligned to drive these products to market.
All right, so Bill, what do you think? What good news do you see for Lisa in her results, and anything you would want to emphasize in development?
Well, I think she would be particularly good working across. Andy mentioned she has to work across a wide number of people and would show a real openness and receptiveness to other people's ideas. I would be kind of curious also where her confidence score is. In an area that's highly technical, the practical wisdom being somewhat lower, I think can create a credibility problem where she may not be as seen as respected or as tough-minded about really technical issues as other people would like to see her. I think the vision kind of says that it's whatever she sees going forward is not coming out in some ways. She may be over the areas and facilitating them working together. but may not really be pushing that out very far. The restraint one is interesting. I'm not sure where that one's coming from, unless it's what she does under pressure. She's not able to do that, but that's kind of a, for me, a little bit of a disconnect with the rest of the things.
In this case, restraint isn't really a red herring. It's more descriptive of her, because she's the sort of person who wears her heart on her sleeve. And to say that she is transparent about her emotional state is an understatement.
Huh. But yet authenticity is not up that high.
Yeah, it could be a close second up there as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So thoughts, reactions, Andy, in terms of, how is Lisa doing with innovation, and what is she doing well, and give us a sense of, Bill's told to give us, some impressions. I thought his comment about working across the organization seemed to really hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, he did. In fact, that's probably what would distinguish Lisa as a leader. She's extraordinarily collaborative. The practical wisdom is as much a function of the fact that because her raters are largely folks who have individual areas of technical expertise, and of course nobody can be as bright about those areas as they themselves are, they tend to undervalue the practical wisdom that other folks have if they don't share the same expertise. So that's really a matter of just understanding for Lisa the environment in which she's operating. And what's leading to those perceptions, and that's frankly digging a little bit into the backstory of what gets uncovered and understanding Lisa's situation.
Yeah.
But she's a brilliant innovator.
A comment coming in, chiming along with Bill a little bit. So Christy Pearson,
hey Christy,
she wrote, "I agree with Bill. I would want to explore confidence and assertiveness also with her. I wonder if she's great at connecting with others." Empathizing with them, but also may not have the gravitas to lead in a strong, assertive manner. So, reactions to that, Andy?
Certainly would be one of the things to look at in this particular case. You guys are doing a marvelous job of catching some of the trends here.
Right. So thanks for those contributions. One quote before we open up for a little bit more discussion. Neil Gaiman, the fantasy author, in a recent commencement address said, make new mistakes. Make glorious mistakes. Glorious, amazing mistakes. Makes mistakes nobody's ever made before. So a real championing of that.
Yeah.
So that if you can have that kind of spirit toward mistakes and new ideas, it can make a big difference for sure. So in our remaining time, question for discussion, and I would kind of open it up to anybody who would like to contribute here. Just I think raising your hand is probably the most useful thing, because I can see that pretty quickly. So based on what we've discussed today, what are the implications? How can we help leaders and teams drive innovation to improve business outcomes? So now that you know what you know, in what way does it matter? What are the implications, do you think, or how might you make use of this knowledge in your coaching of folks, let alone with your feedback? So anybody would like to chime in on that? And Andy, while we're waiting for people to raise their hands, anything you'd want to add to flesh out this question at all?
I think that it's the question itself is great, because it points to the fact that it's leaders and their teams. And that really goes to the heart of a lot of what we were talking about today, that it's not the individual leader who's innovative, it's the leader's ability to orchestrate the organization's treatment of an idea that really distinguishes leaders as being innovative.
Yeah. Anybody else that we can put on the spot? And I'd love to hear a few other people chime in terms of, what do we think we need to be doing to help leaders unleash innovation? I'm going to attempt to unmute Christy here, since she just weighed in, and if I get a screeching round of feedback or dogs barking or something like that, I'll turn it off. Well, let's give it a try. I'd love to hear. Christy, are you there, Christy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. Any thoughts you have on this question? You always have some good observations on these things.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I was thinking of a leader I previously worked with who retired, who was incredibly creative, lots of ideas, pretty risk tolerant, liked to create new and different things, and was okay with mistakes, but he was also extremely intimidating. So he created an atmosphere where people basically just did what he said versus, you know, coming up with their own ideas and really building on his enthusiasm. The person who replaced him is the opposite, not quite as creative, still quite smart, but she's now creating this environment where people want to speak up, but she's not getting them to do that. You know, it's, she's still trying to figure that out. And so I'm thinking about with her, what is it about her that can help push this more innovative thinking she expects from them, but get them to take some risks. So I'm pondering how to think about this with her and how this would be helpful feedback for her if she's trying to create a new organization.
It's interesting. I had somebody a little like this on a call the other day, Christy. And sometimes I find it's helpful to drill down into what questions are they actually asking at pivotal points in the conversation. Because this person's like, well, I give everybody a chance to contribute. And but she was more asking like yes and no questions. Yeah. So is everybody okay with this?
Right.
And, you know, it's sort of like I said, you know, you're putting people in like a speak now or forever hold your peace kind of situation. If you're sitting at that wedding and somebody says that to you, you're not likely to speak up. So is there a way she could reframe the question and say something like, okay, you know, so here's a challenge we're trying to address. I'd really like to hit the pause button now and kind of go around the room and get people's ideas on this. And I don't want to have any of us rush to judge them too much. I just want to get in that kind of idea generation mode. And even it was a kind of a subtle tweak because she really had the intent of getting ideas on the table, but I felt just it was a simple behavioral thing of she was asking for input, but it was in a way, I think Andy's had a term for do it, this kind of a question, right?
It's a closed question.
It's a closed question, yeah. So any other thoughts you have that would be helpful for Christy, Andy, as she tries to get this leader to kind of unlock this? It sounds like, you know, we've got a change for the better with Christy's leader here of somebody who's got the right spirit of it, unlike her predecessor. So what coaching advice do you think might be helpful for this leader to kind of start unlocking innovation?
Well, Christy, one of the things that you said about this leader's situation sparked something for me. So let me just share a perspective that you might play with. And that was, how does the leader create an environment where risk-taking can occur? And I think that one of the things to explore there is, what is it that people are finding risky? And beyond that, what is it that a leader can do that can increase people's likelihood to be willing to take risks? Because sometimes the issue on risk-taking is that a leader isn't being sufficiently transparent so that people don't have an understanding of what's going on. Other times, there's a concern that there may be repercussions for taking risks, or what's the track record that the leader has had when managing risks, and really delving into that, because if risk-taking is starting to be a limiting factor, it may be useful to understand what's happening around that history of risk-taking and what the leader can do to make risk-taking safer.
Hmm. I also think it's interesting, you know, what stories is the leader telling about what's going on at the company?
Yeah.
Is the subtext, if the subtext of the story is, you know, on the one hand, I'm telling people to take chances and take risks, but I'm telling stories rewarding people for not doing that, that's going to be meaningful. So I would say if she can find opportunities to tell stories about people who maybe had a great idea that didn't work. That's one thing my grandfather always used to say. That's a great idea even if it turns out not to work. And it's encouraging to have that. So the kinds of stories she chooses to tell will help celebrate and endorse certain values and behaviors. Is that helpful, Christy?
That's very helpful, and I like those little tweaks, and I'm thinking about our next meeting, so which is next week, so that's very appropriate. Thank you.
Great.
Well, good luck.
We always like to provide a timely insight if we can.
Just in time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So thank you. Yeah. So anyone else, before we wrap up, if there's any other questions or comments or other little mysteries we can solve with this, just feel free to do that hand-raising icon. It's the quickest way you can get our attention here. But while we're waiting to see if we have any other comments or questions come in, Andy, if you could start to kind of bring us home a little bit and kind of share some final takeaways from you that you think might be relevant here, or anything we haven't covered that you think is important for people to keep folks in mind? Because this research is all great. I think where we're starting to go in the conversation is, okay, how do we translate this into coaching behaviors that are going to start yielding the results that we want?
So I think that the one of the key elements here is, in the context of organizations that are focused on innovation, is to help leaders understand the frame around their own expectations. Are they holding on to an expectation that in an innovative culture they have to be coming up with the ideas themselves? Or rather, can they view themselves as key enablers of great ideas in an organization? And if they can do that, then of course the three I's come into bear, all of the work that we do around humility and driving vision forward, all of those aspects of presence that are in the kind of social emotional areas, the connections of to individuals, become more and more relevant, and it really helps the leader draw on their leadership capabilities, not just their ideation capabilities, in being innovation leaders.
Yeah, to build on that, Andy, I think thinking back to our case of Chris, one question I found to be impactful when giving XPI feedback is, if it's coming to light that the person is perceived as the smartest person in the room, or is projecting that they're the smartest person in the room, I'll often try to not really attack them on that, but say, okay, so if we're all operating under the assumption that Chris is the smartest guy in the room, what are all the implications of that? What is that? What are the implications on me if I'm your peer, or on Susan if she's your direct report? And getting people to think through that. And often when you ask leaders that question, they start to go, huh, well, I could start saying, well, if I'm Susan, I'm thinking, well, what's the point of me coming up with an idea? Because Chris has already figured this out. And if I'm a peer saying, you know, he already knows what he wants to go anyway, so he's just humoring me by saying he wants my input. So we start to see the negative impact on things like resonance and concern and quality in business imperatives like engagement as well as innovation if we're acting in that way.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, to wrap up, thanks everyone for joining us today. One other note, before the day is out, I'm excited to announce that we have a new Community of Practice article coming out today. In fact, I'll get it out before the afternoon's over here in Boston. This is also a first, Andy. This is our first co-authored article with one of our certified partners, Halvor Holter, who couldn't join us today. Halvor and his wife, Lena, have been real star performers when it comes to getting a lot of people to go through the XPI in Scandinavia. And Halvor came to me with Offman's theory of core qualities, and he's been tethering that to some of his coaching work. So it takes the concept of overstrengths. It's not exactly the same as overstrengths, but it takes something of that. When does your core quality end up becoming a pitfall?
Right.
And how does that pitfall lead us to a development theme that we might work on? And what is the allergy of the leader? It's usually the opposite of that core quality, something they want to avoid at all costs, and they overcompensate for that as a result. So you can look for that on the content portal later today. I'll be sending an email out for that. This is our last webinar for the year, and thanks for joining us for that. We'll have another one in March, and as always, we'll have more content coming up in January. So if we don't speak to you, enjoy the holidays, have a very happy new year, and wishing you much success and happiness for your family and for you professionally going forward in 2017.
Thanks very much. It was a delight being with you all. Take care.
Okay. Have a good day.